It's Tuesday and time to read from your emails and web comments. Favorite memories about Carl Castle keep coming in. We spoke with him yesterday about his long career in radio and his decision to retire from morning newscasts at the end of this month, though he will continue in his role as official judge and scorekeeper on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Annie Williams sent us this story from Scottsdale, Arizona. A few years ago, my husband was instrumental in bringing Wait, Wait to do a broadcast in Phoenix. I brought my Auntie Emmy with me to do the taping. After the show, we were lucky enough to be invited to join the gang for drinks. The evening was one of the highlights of my life, but my aunt was incredibly disappointed to learn that Carl was married. If I'd been single, I would have felt the same way. Thanks for the memories, Carl. We also learned last week that many of you have fond memories of your cookbooks, though not necessarily the end result of those recipes. Jennifer emailed from Grand Rapids. I thought I was the only person who read cookbooks as a pastime, but keep in mind that cookbooks can also be a part of your family's history. This past weekend, while visiting my parents, my mother pulled out a cookbook I'd never seen before. It was given to her as a wedding shower gift. It contains her go-to recipe for pumpkin pie. What a wonderful story and recipe to share with my kids when they get older. Good food last week and good music, too. Terry Teachout joined us to talk about his new biography, Pops, A Life of Louis Armstrong. One of the points he made was that Satchmo was as much an entertainer as a jazz man, and his critics called him out on it. Joe, a listener in Oakland, California, wrote to argue they should leave Pops alone. Although in our own era we like to pretend that jazz is some kind of pure art form that is separate and nobler than mere entertainment, this completely misapprehends how jazz evolved through ragtime and early dance bands. Duke Ellington's orchestra was at first primarily a show band, and horror of horrors, Armstrong once referred to Guy Lombardo's Royal Canadians as my heroes. Critics might dismiss some of Armstrong's 1930s and later work as less than stellar, but this is more a reflection on our current standards of criticism than the merit of the work in its historical context. And if you were with us a week ago, Peter Melman was just wrapping up his story of talking his way out of jury duty when, well, we ran out of time. Any broadcaster will tell you it's never good to leave a cliffhanger hanging. So Peter Melman is back on the line, this time from his home in California. Nice to have you back with us today.
Nice to be here.
So as listeners will remember from our last exciting episode, you explained after you got out of jury duty and felt badly about evading a system in which you believe that you eventually found out what happened in the trial where you would have been a member of the jury. Can you pick up the story from there?
Yes, the defendant was found guilty on a gun charge, but on the second charge, which is obstructing a police officer from doing his duty, they had a hung jury. It was 11-1. Now, there was one juror who was pleading to get out of jury duty because she had an incredibly important business meeting, and the judge said, okay, I'm willing to excuse you. The prosecutor agreed, but the defendant would not let her go. And it turned out she was the one person who held out.
She was the holdout. She was Henry Fonda.
Could you believe it? She was Henry Fonda.
How about that?
Now Carl Castle could be on jury duty.
Now Carl Castle can report to jury duty. Peter Melman,
I have a rough time getting out of it.
Peter Melman, thank you very much for the story. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Peter Melman's op-ed, I Confess I Finagled My Way Out of Jury Duty, ran in the Los Angeles Times. He's an essayist and former writer for Seinfeld, and we thank him for wrapping things up for us. If you have comments, questions, or corrections for us, the best way to reach us is by email. The address is talk@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and give us some help on how to pronounce your name. Talk of the Nation is produced by Susan Lund, David Gura, John Asante, Dahlia Martinez, April Failing, and Barry Hardiman. Our editor is Scott Cameron. Sarah Handel is our associate producer and also handles our web content. Gwen Uten directs the program. Ivan Burketh is our technical director. He gets engineering help from Dennis Nielsen, Jerry Tennant, and Melissa Marquis. Our broadcast engineers at NPR West are Marcia Caldwell, Leo Delagula, Carlos Asensio, and Theo Mondel. Our theme music was composed by Greg Smith. Our supervising senior producer is Carlene Watson. The executive producer of Talk of the Nation is Sue Goodwin. Alan McDonald is NPR's executive producer of news programming. Tomorrow, defatherization, wrestling with fatherhood in the age of DNA, plus 7 days a week, seven deadly sins, and seven wonders of the world, the mysterious power of the number seven. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you.